You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Anyone? I just remembered this morning you were going to ask something. Is it still, is that right?
Yeah.
Is it still fresh?
Yeah. It was really just clarification. Mm-hmm. Two things I think I like it. One is that you talked about the kind of laying into the sea of softness, gentleness. I just wanted to check what it is that we're laying. Is it the emotion, the attitude around that emotion, and then the sort of humanity.
Mm. Mm. I think it's interesting to check how separate or separable the emotion and the attitude to it are. But anything that you want to lay in the sea of silence, it might be worth trying.
Okay. So any of those elements?
For me, the common the collective nature of the experience is part of the softening.
Okay.
So it's like realizing that that shame, that it was my problem, that I have to fix quickly because I'm behind the others and all that kind of feeling. We might never be willing to say that out loud even to ourselves because it sounds so unsophisticated. But that feeling. And then the realizing over and over again that it's not true, that it's my experience. In so many ways, it's not my experience, not my experience. So did I spin it? And if I did, what thread did I use? And is it true that no one else in the room would have ever been so whatever? And then also the very energy itself, even of not a very large emotion, the energy of it itself speaks of egolessness. It speaks of my not control, my not creating, my not having it only for me, my not even really knowing exactly what it is. And then and that like invites me to listen differently. Like we could say to the music of it. Rather than to the pain of it, mm-hmm. in the way that we connect to the pain of it in a way that keeps paining. If we could listen to the pain with compassion, really interested in what is this arising from, and actually why does it hurt? What is my ability to feel the pain of that? but mostly it's like getting less involved. So that then there might be some feeling of it. There might be some actual contact. And so whether it's mostly to my resistance to the fear or sadness or grumpiness or insecurity or whatever, or the grumpiness itself. And again, whether those two are two, I'm not sure. Because it's actually like when our resentment against the experience is gone, the seeing is so, like, we see clearly and it's not the same situation anymore. The energy is freed. So in one way it could be helpful to feel like, okay, that's sadness and that's the, like, I thought I was supposed to be done with sadness. Or I'm afraid that if I feel that sadness, it's bottomless. That's one with sadness, that often, not actually being in it, but like being kind of before it, we'll say to ourselves, oh, that feels like it's bottomless, but we're not feeling it. We're thinking about it. We feel like we're feeling it. We might even be crying, but it's mostly that we're afraid of it. And partly we're afraid of it because the energy of it is bigger than my idea of what I am. So like other human energies, like sexuality, like death, like survival instinct, like those different drives that are bigger than what I think I am, we might try our best and be very aware, and still we find survival or sexuality is actually driving our car around. We have like the play steering wheel. And wondering, like, why? I'm trying to turn left. Why? And so something even bigger for what I consider myself to be, what I think I am. I wish there I would have a shorthand for that phrase, what I think I am. The energies that are in, like the guitar that we are has those strings, and they get plucked or they start to vibrate because of the other vibrations in the room, like it or not. Fitting into my idea of what I think I am or not. and so, but something even that can accommodate. Ego and the things that seem to threaten ego from the point of view of ego. I actually hate to use that word, but anyway, so like my small sense of myself, and then I feel attacked by my anger. And it's so insulting that I would still have anger after 30 years of meditation. And I'm ashamed from this, what I think I am. And then it can even feel threatening and humiliating that there's some other capacity that can is accommodating everything. And even has a kind of sense of humor that can see the cartoon kind of quality of the small self and the big feelings and experiences and energies. But it's not a mean sense of humor. It's a sparkle in the eye that we can have, feeling ourselves somehow in this imagination that we're not going to die, really. And that yet something that knows we are. And even there's, you know, beautiful descriptions of maybe children doing art, and it comes in the art, a knowing of their death or of someone else's death. So something that accommodates death. I wanted to share a song of Kabir, who was an Indian, he's usually called an Indian saint. I don't think that he would have called himself a saint somehow. He was very fiery. He was, you know, very iconoclastic, like continually making fun of people who thought that, like, by shaving their head, they were closer to enlightenment. Or by killing a goat, they were closer to purification or whatever. Or maybe he considered himself a saint, but his neighbors might not have. And so his tradition is still a living song tradition, song and poetry tradition, which is really cool, because then there's no way to know what really did he sing, because those songs get passed down and then reverberated and branch out in different parts of India, in different ecosystems. So this one song that I'm thinking of for today is Ghungat Ke Pat Kholre. So Ghungat is like, if you've been to India, like it's kind of like the dupatta, which is this completely unnecessary, huge, long piece of fabric, but at first seems completely unnecessary. When I first went to India, the first couple of times, I didn't even notice that there was such a thing as a dupatta. If you think of the long dress shirt and then the loose pants that some women wear and some many girls wear before they're married. So that's not a complete set unless you add the 2.5 meters of dupatta. So the Ghungat Ke Pat is basically a dupatta. So there's a dupatta, there's a scarf. Once I realized that the scarf was an essential element of the kurta pajama, of the costume, the outfit. Though it was a total pain on train journeys, trying to go to the bathroom and not like lose the passport belt, the dupatta, the pants, down the toilet, which is just a hole, you know, right down to the tracks. I gradually found how useful, not only to hide the breasts, so less staring, in that culture of staring at breasts. Our culture stares at breasts on screens, their culture more stares at breasts on streets, train stations, restaurants. And then sunscreen, blanket, swimming suit. But especially privacy. And privacy is like a very tender word now for us. I think it's hard for us to know what to do about privacy. And I just want to kind of hearken back to the first, so I can't just check in, India, train station, rats. It's just radiators. Right? Filling, I guess. So if you can't hear it, there's just a little sound. Rain stick. Okay. I talked about my teacher, Papaji, using sleep as a an encouragement example for finding a clue about some deeper nature that does accommodate things that are beyond us as we know ourselves. So when we sleep, we abandon everything, the most beloved, the most identified with everything. And so just considering that as one kind of layer or version of privacy, like being willing to be that alone, and that that would be, as he would say, you wake up and you, what you know is that you know if you've slept well or not. So it could be this most refreshing privacy, most restorative. So in the Kabir poem, it's when the dupatta, when the scarf, not the right word, scarf. So I'm going to say dupatta, so that means that long scarf. When the dupatta opens, then you will meet your beloved. That's the refrain throughout the song. When the scarf, when the dupatta opens, then you will meet your beloved. So in my talking about privacy, it's that going that in, to find that beloved that accommodates, that's not insulted by anything. In the different versions of the song now, some of the verses are in either missing or in different order. And the way I learned it, the first verse says, Dhana jobana ka garaba na kije. So dhana is wealth, and jobana is youth. And it's one of those, that it could sound this very pedantic, old-fashioned statement, don't be proud of your wealth and youth. And I never really felt the juiciness at first of this first line. But although I like the reason why not to be proud of your wealth and youth. And so it's jhuta pancharanga. The jhut is like delusion or illusion. The illusion, the illusory five elements are going to fall apart. They fall apart, that's what they do. They come together, they fall apart. So it's the different way of experiencing the sacredness of the human form as something we receive. And we're in the midst of this mysterious weaving for a while. And that's where we can feel that sparkle of humor that we take seriously, that it matters, you know, that inch here or there. And I know it's something that really hurts almost everyone that I know, the relationship to body. And then the culture about aging on top of whatever fear of death might be there, fear of pain or something. But the story-ness. And living in India so much of my adult life just came to me the last couple of days, such a gratitude and kind of wonder how that so happened, to live long enough among people wearing those loose long things with all that privacy. That there's not the chance to for comparing mind to come in about a waistline or my big butt or whatever. Not to mention that when I first started going to India, skinny was bad. Skinny was bad luck. You didn't have enough money to eat tons of ghee and sweets and puri. And even now, it sounds funny, and also it's funny that it sounds funny, that the some of the movie stars, female, sometimes have to give in, or they decide, they choose to give in to the wishes of their fans that they don't lose too much weight, that they stay curvy. And to be in that kind of soup instead of this kind of soup for decades. After growing up in a culture that's maybe, it's hard to think of a girl in my class that didn't have an eating disorder of some kind in high school. And that was before internet. Way, way before internet. So this is not something that's talked about so much on retreats. But if we could just feel the amount of energy in yourself and also among ourselves that goes into body hatred and body competition, as if you're in control. As if you're a nice person when you diet. And also not as if it's a black and white thing. Not that because it's not my body in that way, that it doesn't need to mean anything to me about my lovability and worthiness and belonging. What kind of shape I'm in, visibly. And that doesn't mean not to have fun in the body. So kind of sacred fun in the body, the juiciness of, now by now some of you might be more rested. And I want to just, even though I haven't told you to lie down at all times, people often think that I've said that and think that I'm looking like police, like if someone might walk fast or do a cartwheel or something. And so just remember that it's like getting into a rhythm of stillness and action. That the action can also be restful, restorative in its way. And the rest, obviously, you might have noticed by now, maybe not, also starts to be the most creative time. 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 Did you notice? Is it still too early? So then it's like revisiting that line, not to be proud of the way the five elements weave together in terms of what you have in your care, or what you find yourself in the midst of. It doesn't say forget about wonder or enjoyment. Just don't take it personally. Or notice how taking it personally really sucks. It really sucks. And can we dare to kind of believe in, imagine in a wholesome way, what it would be like to be together without comparing? Dhan or Joban, wealth or, they say youth. We could say fitness. We could say health, we could say whatever. So I'm just kind of like calling from the other side where I haven't been like up to here in that toxic influence my whole life. And so I can say, and so you could feel that it's possible, that I love aging, including that no longer does anyone come to me and say, oh, you look so young for your age. I can see they look at me and say, oh yeah, even she is aging, even with all that rest. The five elements. The dupatta opens and then you'll meet your beloved. They sing again. And then, depending on which version of the song they talk about, or we could say he sang about, maybe while weaving, so we could have that rhythm and that the craft sound of weaving. Shuk, boom, shuk, boom, shuk, boom. Not just a, so like an organic rhythm. He was a weaver. As well as he would call himself a head cutter. He speaks, or they speak, of a palace of shunya. And the word in English doesn't do the trick, emptiness. Maybe transparency. Maybe that improbability of the apple, that out of nowhere comes everything, as far as we can tell. Where everything comes out of is nowhere. It comes out of nowhere. So despite all of the information that we have about the body and how it works and how it's conceived, there is no clue, no clue. And it's so funny when the scientists, they themselves, I think, must be laughing when they give the possible theory of how the first bacteria, our grandmothers, came to be. They know they don't know. And because we rely on them for knowing, we think that someone must know. And we lose track of something so important. Impossibly, that would be another way to say it, in the impossible, in the castle of impossibility. So here, the castle. Just up Castle Road, there's the castle of impossibility. In the United States, there's Castle Road, but there's no castle. Castle Park, Castle Road, Castle Lane. Four lanes, no castle. Does that make sense? Does it come across at all? The Sunna Mandirame. So in some versions it's a temple, in some versions it's a mahal, a palace. Sunna Mandirame, in the palace of space. In the palace of the source of all things. That looks like nothing. That most humble magician. In that palace, light aflame. Light aflame, light a candle, diya. If you've been to India, or maybe now the images that are everywhere, a clay, or in the palace, let it be gold, whatever, diamond. It's just a tiny little cup. It's like that, the body cupped around the lower belly. And the lower belly, and its aliveness. And let it light. So it's like just a little dish with oil and a cotton wick that can be lit. And the wick, being a wick, pulls the oil up into the flame. impossibly, goes against gravity without any muscle. So the sensuality, like being sourcing the lower belly, resting into the lower belly, the lower back, the back of the body, the feet, the humble. Finding in the rest that energy comes out of nowhere, keeps coming. We keep finding that we could rest again more, really, and more energy. There's another song of Kabir, short one, that I'll just bring in here. Remembering, that word again, remembering the empty, the easy. So remembering the impossible, let's say, remember that impossibility of ripening, that kind of impossibility, that ordinary impossibility. It happens all the time. We're in it. We're made of it. Yes. Ripening. Maduran, madurando, getting mature, like a, okay, so like a fruit, start small, green, hard, yes, thank you for asking, anything else before I go on? So remembering the empty and the easy, remembering the empty, the easy, remembering the impossible ripening, the easy ripening. Remembering the empty, the easy. A light broke out. I offer myself to a being based on nothing. That's the gambling or the love. In this case, being, this is a translation by Linda Hess. She's translating the word purush, which could be that being that has space for everything. It could sometimes be sort of that inner deity. It could sometimes feel more like a beloved, a vow, or it could feel more like my true nature. So I offer myself, so lighting the flame, to a being that's bigger than me, that's more than what I think myself to be, based on nothing. There's no contract, no promise, no guarantee. So that happening, and what is our part? Remembering, basically. And then remembering, really noticing what is actually happening, and how different from what I think is happening, was happening, is going to happen. Remembering what is. And then we could see through that expectation for a bargain, a promise. An utter safety. To that out of nowhere, it comes.
My question.
Yes.
Just in that last practice, it was quite tight because there's a lot of pain. But I stayed still, stayed with them, very wondering. Just most of the thinking around it, and allowing that, sort of thanking that, and coming back to.
Totally. Yeah. Just take your time, totally.
And I just kept staying with it. I wasn't sure whether I should stay with it or move, and I just kept staying with it. And eventually, there's a sort of rush of fear here. And it felt a little too much. But I just stick with it, and I just got really hot. report to me. I just kind of leave that blanket, white face on my own. And then the bell went. And I couldn't move. And I just, it was part of me that kind of didn't want to feel. I kind of, I stayed with it, but there was a little bit of moving away from it a little bit, but I couldn't move. I just couldn't move. The fear was sort of coming as I couldn't move. I was like immobilized. I suppose, I'm not really sure what the question is, but after that, I couldn't move eventually. I stayed with it because I'd experienced it before and perhaps I listened to it all. And I think it was just, but then afterwards I knew I needed to walk barefoot and I was just crying. I don't know why, just sadness, but there was joy in sadness. And I guess the question is, like, sometimes I'm not sure whether to just stay with the pain or how to stay with it. And sometimes I worry that I might put sort of, I don't know, I didn't feel like I was testing myself, but, or whether it's dangerous.
Did you say, I didn't feel like I was testing myself?
I kept opening, allowing them softly. So I can, I know that that's a pattern of mine.
Okay.
If I'm sitting, particularly, I just love working with pain. But that was, I knew I would keep opening to that because if you talked about sitting, and so I was really aware that I wanted to really just open and soften and allow. But it was painful and then, you know. So I don't think I was. I think it was allowing and opening and softening, but there was some fear. What the fear came, that was really intense. So yeah, it just sort of, I'm not sure knowing whether it's okay to, how much to allow.
Yeah.
That you're safe.
Yeah.
The sense that it arose from nowhere is very different, and that felt really important, and it felt like I'd let go of something when I went outside, and something's left me, and I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sounds like it was fine, and that those symptoms of release, and also great concentration. So the heat and can be that part of the release. And interestingly, heat is often a symptom of releasing of the trying too hard pattern, the pushing myself pattern. So it's interesting that the question is that, and the release might also be that. And then the being still, so still is sometimes because of being in so concentrated. The thing that I'm happy is that you knew you needed to walk barefoot and you did, and you know that there was not a break in the flow. And so now it's sort of, well, how can we have the question but not be inviting like a erosive, corrosive self-doubt? And so to me, it's like, trust your practice. You have good momentum. And maybe now it's also feeling an underflow below where you've been thinking about, this is my practice, this is the sphere that I'm working with and where I decide what to do and how. Something underneath that that's more slippery, more accommodating, that could just be there as kind of that remembering that the release could also happen without pushing through pain, or not that you were pushing through pain today, but without an inkling of that. So this is not to construe this as a mistake or to open the door to like, how, what should I do, how should I, you know, it's not to put fear and doubt, self-doubt in the driver's place. But to open to a more subtle, clear flow, almost as if underneath you, that helps your intuition. And sort of it could be that the when in doubt, if you know yourself to be attracted to working with pain, then don't. If when in doubt, like not a conversation, just don't. Do what if I don't do that, then what? What comes? What's the creativity? And the reverse for people that it's, I feel intimidated about working with pain. So maybe something that's just a bit uncomfortable, you feel bored, for example. It's not a, it's a hard mind state, but it's not that hard. Just feel it in the body. Or a fly lands. It's a little too warm, a little too cool. And just meeting that, if your system, your program freaks out about being uncomfortable. So in the song, in the castle of the impossible being possible, light a lamp. And then the second line of the couplet is, and then stay. Don't move from that asana. Don't move from that seat or position. And I'm glad that Donna asked this question, because we could fixate. We could try to follow that suggestion and try to stay, for example, with the pain rather than with my best guess, my best intuition. So the remembering and the staying or establishing is not so much with the object, such as pain or an emotion or a story that you're working with or whatever, but more with the attitude, the approach. The dupatta will opens, and you will meet your beloved. So there's a few more good, nice lines that we'll save for tomorrow. But I still would like to read a short poem by a Japanese woman. Her name is Izumi Shikibu, and she lived in the court of what at that time, if I remember well, was sort of a much bigger city than anything happening in Europe at the time. And there were lots of lovers crisscrossing around in that place at that time. And so one time, someone she knew saw another man with a fan and asked whose fan it was and was told that it was her fan. Does that make sense? And he was upset and wrote on the fan a calligraphy can get the kind of style. Floating woman or something like that. And then when she received the fan with this calligraphy message, her fan came back to her saying, floating woman, in the handwriting which she knew of that ex-lover who was jealous. And she said, some cross the pass of love, some don't. Unless you are the gatekeeper there, it is not your right to cast blame. Some cross the pass of love, some don't. I'd like to apply this internally rather than now starting the guessing game of, will I ever be one who crosses the pass of love, or will I always, or could I at least be the gatekeeper? But internally, where there's love, where there's accommodating everything, there's room and a sparkle in the eye. And where in our psyche there isn't. So that part of us that can't cross the pass of love, can't get through that passageway or threshold or eye of the needle or whatever, but has the tendency to cast blame. And I want to put it even more in a context of one of my favorite quotations of the year, something that one of my teachers said, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen teaches embodied anatomy and body-mind centering. She's a genius force of nature. She said that our culture asks us to remember with the nervous system. And this work, which is also this work, we forget with the, we're called to forget with the nervous system and remember with the cellular life force. For some people, those words could just come across. If they don't, take it very much metaphorically. The feeling of the nervous system and the amount of information that we try to bear. As one of the main values, as one of the main having a sense of power, autonomy, value, getting somewhere. And the quality of dryness and even strife, so striving and strife. As embryos, the nervous system formed out of the same layer of cells that became our skin. We could consider it as just a superficial system rather than the core of our being or even the metaphor for that. And so having the chance to forget with the nervous system is going nonverbal. Not so much listening to the storyline, coming off the grid of either or thinking of right and wrong. And remembering with cellular life force, we can feel the roundness, a sense of completeness. That's not a like closing, complete but open. And kind of like musical in communication with other completeness. And instead of strife, instead of comparing mind, instead of feeling less than or better than or equal to even, one of my favorite lines of Gautam is that the wise one, it doesn't even enter the mind to think of better than, lesser than, or even equal to. So not to strive to get to that place where that wouldn't enter my mind, and then I'll be okay, because I matched the information. But remembering a time where you gave up caring about it, or you felt happy with what it is, even though. It's the sensuality of the even ordinary perceptions. Is there anything left anyone would like to ask, share, say? Thank you. May our cellular life force remembering be the center of our lives, enjoyed to the fullest. Proliferating awakening in all directions, inward and out.